there is a lot of leverage that I saw was happening around me. And that moment with my son is what got me to realize, you know, you hear the what's your why? That was the why. It's like there's got to be a better way to go about to hack this time, hack this industry.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Justin Getz is an active real estate investor, having spent years in a variety of residential investment strategies, fix and flips, new construction, development, buy and holds. He's now fully focused on commercial investments, primarily multifamily and storage units. His extensive background in sales and account management have provided him with the skills to raise capital and manage investor relations while seeking his first joint venture or co-GP opportunity. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here with you.
Hey, man. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Can you briefly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah. So I would say I started probably in mid-2000s, probably around 2005, 6. That was my entry into real estate. I actually started as an apprentice to pretty notable, well, now certainly notable investor in the and capital group owner in the commercial space. But at the time, I didn't know anything. We grew up together. And so I said, hey, can I take you to lunch, pick your brain? Looks like you're doing some cool stuff. I have no idea what it is. And he was gracious enough to do so. And we caught up over a good lunch. And then he invited me to come work and kind of study in his operation there. So my first foray into real estate was in the commercial side. Interestingly enough, he took off so much so that he actually didn't have time to mentor like he thought he would. And through no fault of his, he just had a meteoric rise and came to me and said, look, I feel horrible. I don't have the means to be there the way I thought I could be for you. And I said, no hard feelings. So I did what everybody does at that time. When you feel like you're on the road to something, you go back to what you know, and that was residential. So I'm studying this commercial space and everything I want to do. And I'm like, I still don't get it. It's too intimidating. Let's pivot. So that got me to the residential side. I actually started a company with my father, and we did kind of a full suite residential investment company where we were, you know, doing buy and holds for the portfolio. We were fixing, flipping. Like my bio says, you know, we did some new ground up construction and dabbled in that space and did that for a number of years. Rode through the 2008 collapse, which was an interesting component to the story. And it's recently, I would say over the last year or so, I've decided to really go back to what makes sense at this point in my career in residential or in real estate and pivot to the commercial space. So that's kind of where I'm fully focused now.
Right, right. And you this whole time, were you based in Texas?
Yeah. So grew up in South Texas, but moved to San Antonio when I was, I guess, 15. So my base of operations has been Central Texas. You know, I went to college here in Austin, UT. So based, I would say home based here in Austin. Most of our product was in San Antonio at the time we were running the company. Still got some San Antonio stuff. And then we've got some Austin area properties as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to ask, because, you know, you said 2008 was interesting, you know, and people say that Texas fared better for the most part than maybe the rest of the country did through that downturn. So what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, I would agree across the board. So what happened was one of our biggest project actually to date at the time was this luxury kind of higher end 3-unit townhome build. So we were in the heart of Alamo Heights, which is kind of old money, really growth oriented part of San Antonio, that we were under construction for at that point, certainly our biggest project to date. And it was basically, I want to say it was about a $1.1, $1.2 million build, something like that. And the retail, projected retail, based on the penciling that we did, you know, at the time, this was pre-fallout, was around kind of $1.6 million to $1.7 million, you know, at the most north end retail side for these units. So there was a decent enough spread. What happened was because we were at the highest end of the market, just with regards to the product itself, this was very luxury, right? So it wasn't, you know, you were working class or more realistic or affordable housing that made sense for kind of, you know, the regular buyer. We knew we were going after a niche market. And the numbers worked in end of 2006, 2007, when we're getting the financing in order, when we're getting all of our project lined up, the architectural designs, you know, all of the early stages. Well, right in the middle of our build, everything in 2008 happens. And so it was a really interesting series of events. I mean, there's a whole story just on this I could probably share, but this was where we had financing out of personal relationships from a regional bank in Chicago, actually based out of Chicago. They ended up getting acquired during this entire 2008 transition. I think, honestly, we weren't obviously exposed. We're just one account of many, but I think there was a little bit of a liquidity issue on their end. And so they ended up being acquired by a much larger entity. That entity came to us and said, we can't find your paperwork. We don't know where this is on paper. That's news to us. That's a shock to us. So we're like, well, what are we supposed to be doing? How are we having these, you know, documented track records and like showing them what we're doing? We're producing all of our receipts and every bit of statement we've got on our end, as far as the draws and all of that. But, you know, they had no document of agreement. And so that got us a little worried. And so they said, look, here's the deal. By the way, in the meantime, the residential side or the market we were catering to was just non-existent because, you know, nobody was buying a luxury product, much less like some even like affordable product.
Sure.
So we said the bank came to us and had an offer. So we knew our market dried up. We didn't have the right paperwork that they needed not through no fault of our own. They said, look, here's the deal. How about you just walk away? We're going to take ownership of this unless you want to roll the dice on paying us back that you're going to feel confident in your sale. We said, you know what? We're not that confident given that the entire economy had collapsed. And so we said, we're going to walk away. And so they basically let us out for kind of, we took a cut on it, a little bit of a paper cut, but they were partners or contemporaries of ours doing similar products that just unfortunately had a lot of recourse and just lost their shirts. And so, you know, by comparison, we thought we made it out all right. But that was the 2008 big dilemma for us, despite, I agree with you, holistically, the Texas market's faring pretty well.
Yeah, which I mean, that brings up just a really interesting point. You know, you're talking about luxury and where risk lies, you know, because it's, I mean, people have been talking, saying, hey, you know, we're long in the tooth on this bull run in the economy. We're long in the tooth. keep saying it. Dude, I've been hearing that for 4 years. Watch out.
Anytime it's going to turn. Yep.
Right. Which, you know, at some point you'll be right. But, you know, the you do have to look, even, you know, even though they've been saying it for a while, and look and say, hey, where does risk lie? Right.
Yep.
And in the luxury, you know, high end stuff, I think that's where the first people to take a haircut. I think the second.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I was just telling you, you're exposed. Because you're not able to liquidate and move quickly if you know you're catering to a much smaller demographic, right? It's supply and demand. If the demand shrinks up, then what do you do with your supply?
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And you're starting out of the gate with a higher or with a lower number of people in the demand category. So that's really interesting. I think the other thing that's fascinating here about your story is just how the banks lost your paperwork, which, you know, it's not as uncommon as you would think, even in the age of digital records.
You know, when I was first, at the time, we thought, how could this possibly have happened? I mean, there's no way there on earth that this is what's going on right now. Come to find out, like you said, we hear stories and talk to colleagues in the industry, and they've been in similar experiences once or twice. So like, wow, I guess this is more common than we had thought.
Yeah.
It blew my mind.
Yeah. And it's usually in some sort of, you know, a hostile takeover or, you know, a bank's forced to sell. And then, I mean, it's just, you know, when half the staff that was handling the loan department has to pack
disappears.
Up, have to walk away. Like, yeah. They're not like, oh yeah, we saved all that in this drive on such and like, nah, it's just gone.
It's just not there anymore. So you're like, all right, what am I to do?
Yeah. So you just basically gave them a deed in lieu of foreclosure.
Yep. That's exactly what happened. We said, you know what? Here you go. We're happy to walk away. We signed some paperwork saying hold harmless. And that was it. That was that. I mean, like I said, it was certainly a far cry from our expectations. I mean, as I'm assuming a whole number of investors going in, leading into, you know, the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed swirl leading into 2008 turned out to be, but
right.
Yeah, that was a big lesson learned. There was a lot I gained from that for sure though.
Yeah, man, that's fascinating. I know that's not even what we got on this podcast to talk about.
No, but it's a fun, tidbit.
Yeah. And there's a lot of lessons packed into that, you know? I mean, the name of the podcast is How to Scale. And how do you scale? You got to learn some of these lessons, you know, from guys like yourself that have figured this out, you know, from doing it. So that's fantastic. So let's fast forward then. Here it is, 2021. You have done residential practically up until now. Or maybe a year ago, I should say. And then you said, hey, look, you know what? I'm stepping out of residential. I'm going into self-storage and multifamily. Can you walk us through the thought process behind that and kind of how you came to that conclusion?
Yeah. So the last year, I became a lot more serious or kind of steadfast in becoming a student of this space. Because as you know, residential commercial, obviously, there's some overlap, but there's a lot of very unique ways to go about that in those respective industries. And so, you know, though I felt confident in residential, there was a lot to learn on the commercial side. I would say, and I've shared this a couple times with folks, I've kind of told my story, if you will, is that my son is, we have one kiddo, hopefully two, maybe not too distant future, but our first son is almost 2.5. And I call his birth was basically my inflection point in my life. Because as a lot of parents realize, you know, there's, I call it life pre-kids and then life after kids. And, you know, any parent normally says, yeah, I like you, like they smile, they're like, yep, they nod, I get it. You know, and there's kind of this unspoken bond and understanding that is shared amongst parents. Well, it's very much true for me. And I realized there's only so much I can do with the number of hours in a day that can leverage what's best for my family, knowing that I am wholly more responsible for this whole other life that is dependent on me. And there's a lot of responsibility for that. And so that was really the seed. It's like, how do I maximize basically return on time and what I've got to apply? And so residential was fun and it was profitable at times, as you heard in the 2008 story, not always. And certainly I took some cuts, but there is a lot of leverage that I saw was happening around me. And that moment with my son is what got me to realize, you know, you hear the what's your why? And that was the why. It's like, there's got to be a better way to go about to hack this time, hack this industry. Right. And so that was the seed. And the last year, I would say I made the time to invest in becoming a student. Mm. And so that was learning different, you know, components of, you know, multifamily real estate, of commercial real estate, understanding how the funding works, understanding how vital capital raising is, and the networking component, knowing this is a team sport, right? You know, and residential, my father and I were pretty autonomous. We run and gut, you know, we were doing it pretty nimble. Right. And it was working all right that way. Well, that's not how this side worked. Not if you want to be successful at it anyway, and try to scale. And so I've been learning, and that's kind of what brought me to kind of that focus again.
Right. No, I love that. And that's, you know, like you said, I love the ROT, the return on time. That's a common refrain we hear. You know, the two things that people are looking for is time freedom and money freedom. And you can find your way to get that return on time. What are some things that have been challenging to you in that journey? We say, okay, I now know how I'm going to get my return on time, or at least I know the vehicle. But then what have been some things that have been kind of unexpected surprises in this journey over the last 12 months?
Yeah, great question. For me, this is very personal for me, but it's patience. Mm. Because if you ask my wife, she'll probably confirm, I'm inherently not very patient of a person. And so, but what that, it's a good lesson to be taught, because like I said, being able to be nimble and kind of autonomous in residential, and understanding there's kind of, I don't know, there's more of a method to understanding the various components that go into, you know, scaling commercially. It's different. It takes time. You have to build the rapport. You have to, you know, really deliver on the reputation for potential investors and the relationships that you're negotiating with them, even from, you know, soft commit conversations and understanding kind of what you're about. So it's building that up. You know, a lot of us hear about building your brand. And so it's understanding as you go beyond, you know, the friends and family component, it's how do you legitimize yourself as a brand in the space, which again, none of these, I didn't really have to do a lot of these things in the residential side. You kind of just go for it and make things happen with a phone call or two and some sweat, you know? And it's just, so I think that's been a learning curve for me, is just understanding to take the time to invest in the right people, the right places, the right structure, and keep at persistence. Just keep at it. And then it bears fruit. And it's true. I mean, I'm meeting fantastic people. I'm being presented, you know, certain opportunities that a year ago I never would have thought that I've been, you know, even able to have conversations about. And I love the networking component. I mean, I've got a W-2 job. I'm in sales. And so part of my day-to-day is how do I provide solutions for people? That's just my job. And I absolutely translate that to, you know, investor relations, to capital raising. It's like, what is your solution? Or what's your pain? How can I be a solution for you? And whether that's, you know, figuring out how to maximize a dollar on a return, whether that's you want to retire early, you've got certain things you're trying to accomplish for your goal. So anyway, a lot of parallels there, but that I've noticed that reining it all in and being patient and being methodical was new for me.
Yeah. And that goes back to the idea of mistaking activity for progress. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that I can relate to this because coming also similar story to yours in the single family space, where it's like, man, I can walk out and my phone will ring and by noon I have a property under contract. And everybody walks through it. I know about what it's worth and cool. Aren't we signing contracts? And then I got the money in the bank and we're going to close and you send it to your attorney. It's like things are happening, right?
Yep. Yep.
It feeds that need to be productive. And that's addictive. Like it's addictive.
It is.
Because I hate sitting still, man. Like I have a pull-up bar in my office because sometimes I'm on the phone and I just can't sit still while I'm talking. So I'm doing pull-ups, having conversations because I'm, you know, just can't sit still. But it feeds that same thing. But then you move to multifamily when it's like, there's method and there's time.
Yep.
There is, hey,
there's a process.
Which is the beauty of it as well, because then it's repeatable. And not that it's not repeatable on the single family side. I think it's just easier to not make it repeatable.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. I mean, it teaches you to hone your craft or kind of your area of expertise. We all have these natural gifts or areas we want to focus on. You know, like I said, mine is more kind of from my W-2 sales oriented, investor relations and capital raising, because it's just inherent to my personality. And so I think that's where my talents are best suited. But, you know, nonetheless, I understand that there is a process to understanding how that fits into the greater puzzle of, you know, asset management and property management, understanding the funding and financing and what those terms, what are good terms, sourcing deals. There are so many layers to this. And once you get a structure, and I'll admit I'm far from having this down pat. So I'm a student, but as I'm learning these different components, they're adding up to repeat, like you said, something repeatable, something you can kind of run the play and find success in these motions.
Right, man, that's great. That's great. And it requires a lot of discipline, a lot of measured discipline to figure that out and get it done. And yeah, where you are is where a lot of us have been and, you know, potentially currently are right now. So, you know, you're not alone. It's the same thing that everybody has gone through. So
yeah,
that's good. At least you recognize it and see where that's going. Let's talk about the money side of things.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, common hangups is the investor relations and money raising side of things. What has that process been like, going out and talking to potential investors about where you're going?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been very enjoyable for me, but that's because, like, again, I'm predisposed to that in my personality. I truly like it. And I just have what I call like these discovery conversations. So in sales, you'll hear a lot of times you run discovery meetings, which are these intro or initial meetings with prospective clients or customers, and where you uncover their pain points, you uncover goals, you start to, and what I realize is that is a direct parallel to these conversations I'm having with potential investors. Just one, teaching them about me, you know, and kind of what my goals are and how I operate. But even far more importantly than that, it's how, if that's a match for what they're trying to accomplish, first of all, and then if so, what does that look like? So what I'm learning is that also takes time, because we've all heard it. There are a number of potential investors, they've got capital to dispense or to deploy for a particular reason, but that doesn't always mean it's best suited for whatever deal you've got or whatever, you know, the structure is for your business model for that particular deal. And again, I'm used to residential. Hey, I'm raising money. I got a deal. Here's the deal. You want in? No? Okay. Like, yes, great. But, you know, and then that's kind of the end of that story.
Right.
It's a lot more nuanced when you talk with holding money. You got to think about this too. The cycle of hold cycle is far less in the way I operate my residential, right? Flips and even new construction. I mean, I'll be in and out in 12 months, you know, ground up for the types of deals we were doing. So that's not a lot. That's a CD maybe at, you know, from right. a bank. It's not a big investment from time. Well, if we're trying to raise for, you know, a 5-year hold, 7-year hold, whatever the model is, it's, you're asking for a relationship. You're asking for, this is long-term. We're in this together.
Right.
And I've got to make sure it's my job that I'm having these constructive conversations, that I am mapping to investor goals. And if not, I got to be honest about that. And that's how I operate, you know, with my W-2 customers and, you know, the real estate investment world. It's like, I'll tell you if we're not a match, because I don't want your money and you not to be happy about it. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%, man. 100%. You nailed it on the head. That's, yeah, far, far better to not take the money than to have somebody get in a deal. Cause yeah, this is the long haul.
It is. And that's that was a learning component for me and how I was negotiating these conversations. Even like I said, first intro conversations, or a friend of a friend connected me to so-and-so. And we're not even talking about a deal. It's more just talking about, hey, you know, here's what I'm up to. You know, what are you up to? And just learning about each other. It's very much I see it as a process of discovery and curiosity. If I approach with curiosity and the intent to help, then I have much more constructive conversations. But kind of theming it all together, there's an element of patience and understanding that goes with that, because, you know, it's their hard-earned money. I have to treat it with respect, and I do, and I take it very seriously. And but it's something that is paramount in understanding how you're going to cradle their investment, because for a lot of these people, it's a college fund for their kiddo, or it's, you know, retirement money. And I don't take that lightly. And so, you know, you've got to cradle and take care of it. And so anyway, that's something I've learned, is that it's a little bit different. It's slower paced. It's a, let's date for a while. Let's learn about each other. Let's, you know, really vet this out. And I mean, I'm enjoying it, but it takes time.
Right. Man, that's great. That's great. Justin, running out of time here. Let's jump here into the final four questions.
Yeah.
First question is this. If I gave you $20,000 to invest in real estate, what would you do with it and why?
I love this, because it's actually what I'm doing basically right now. I would use that to anchor on to probably a GP or sponsor, somebody in that capacity that could peel back the curtain and allow me to learn and provide value along the way, right? So whether that's, I'll supplement that capital with more capital, or raise money on top of the 20, you know, the money that I've gifted in the scenario, or whatever the case may be. That's what I would do. It's, let's put that to work and learn along the way.
Right, man. That's great. That's great. If you could help our listener avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Run your numbers backwards, forwards, and then beat them up as hard as you can. And if it still looks good, you know you're all right. Now, I know that we're in a highly compressing market right now. So, you know, you can't be as conservative and still hope to have everything pencil out or have a deal to work with. But nonetheless, I always err conservatively. And that's something that I recommend everybody do. It's be hard on your numbers. And if it works, you know you're on to something.
Right. No, that's absolutely great. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
I don't know if it's through invest. I mean, I like to think my investing's helping. I'm a big charitable just person with the time. I like to donate my time to various causes. I have a super soft spot for children. Mm-hmm. So anybody who knows me knows that being a dad has been my favorite job I've ever had. But this goes back to, I used to work at a daycare when I was in college, just because wow. I liked the teaching and kind of helping foster curiosity in children. So I got a soft spot for kids. So I like to be a part of anything that has to do with children. I volunteered at children's hospitals and just making them laugh and dressing up like goofy characters, whatever the case may be. So I don't know. It's not investment related, but that's something I always enjoy doing.
No, man. And that question is not investment. Typically, you know, it's not an investment related question necessarily.
That's great.
No, that's awesome, man. I love that. Absolutely love that. Justin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, I would just say LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. You can look me up, just Justin Getz. I think I'm probably one of the only top searches if you search my name there. But yeah, LinkedIn is where I'm starting to be really focused, just because that seems to be a lot of my colleagues are operating there. I'm finding a lot of great conversations and great connections. So absolutely, I'd love to chat, reach out.
Awesome. Justin, thank you so much for your time today.
I appreciate it, Sam. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor
And subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.